something of a reformed resurgence, broadly speaking, out there. I think you see a revitalized and reformed PCA. And we are not going to let our PCA, beloved PCA, get involved in intersectionality and get involved in side B gay Christianity and get involved in egalitarianism. And we are not going to go the way of our mother denomination. And I feel like we are making course adjustments, not perfectly.
Oh boy, today's guest is a treat. He wrote the BCO. He's an administrative machine with a pastor's heart, the indomitable Melton Duncan. That's your intro.
George, I feel like you're setting me up for something here, brother. I am honored to be your guest today, and I love being on Grace at the Gates. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great. Yes, that was your intro. And you're always a fan favorite, no matter what the title of my podcast is. You're a fan favorite, so I'm glad we can make this work.
Well, I love being on, and I love following you online and watching you do the Lord's work and keeping up with you. And I'm looking forward to the conversation today. A lot of good things going on in the life of the church and a lot of good things going on in ministry, and look forward to talking with you about it today.
Yes, thank you for that. Okay, so a lot of things are going on. We have the Gospel Reformation Network Conference in just a couple of weeks in my home state, the great free state of Florida. And so we'll want to talk about that maybe toward the end. But we also have General Assembly, I think, 2 months away.
2 months out, 60 plus days out.
60 plus days out and as many overtures, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And you're on the administrative permanent committee, are you not?
I am, and headed to Lawrenceville tomorrow night, actually, for AC meetings, and looking forward to that. Cannot say enough good things about John Bice and the administrative staff, and there's some really good things happening with the administrative staff, and some good things to report. Of course, so excited about Fred Greco coming in as the state clerk elect, and a lot of good things to say there. You know, the PCA, like a lot of local churches and presbyteries, when there's a need and a clearly defined situation, we pull together, and people have given money and churches have stepped up, and I'm excited about people have pulled together, and the AC is going to have a good report at GA, and looking forward to hearing that and reporting on that in a few months in Louisville.
Yes. You know, that exactly what you said. I mean, John Bice, such a great guy for such a time as this. And, you know, the PCA in the last, I mean, our whole history, but the last year is really proof once again that the Lord will uphold, support, build his church, you know, with both John Bice in the interim stated clerk. I don't know what we call that officially. And then also with Steve Dowling at the helm of MNA. I mean, the idea that we could have this kind of caliber of ruling elders, and you're a ruling elder, that can just step into these roles is really remarkable.
Yeah, you're more familiar with the M&A story being at Ministry to State, but I've heard great things that Steve has done at M&A, and I've heard the financial picture is much improved, and so much of it is just good old fashioned, you know, ruling elder, put your back to the plow and get out there and meet with folks and, you know, going to churches and presbyteries and making people aware of the need and having hard conversations with staff, and do we really need to be spending money here? And is this really the mission of the church? And it is so good for every organization, every session, every presbytery to do that. And super excited about Steve Dowling and what's going on there. And super, super good. A lot of good things going on in the PCA, George. I don't know if the PCA is going to get ready for good news and positive energy out there. I mean, this is exciting.
It really is. And so God willing, we will have a new stated clerk in Fred Greco. That's obviously no secret. I was, I saw him last week, as I saw you last week. He's already getting, ready to move and all of that. And so we need to keep his church in prayer also, losing
Yeah,
their
that's
senior
right.
pastor.
That's right.
And then I don't know. Have you heard any chatter on the moderator discussion? It's a ruling elder this year, God willing. So,
It's a ruling elder year. We'll see who the Lord has in place for that. And I my understanding is there are a lot of people coming to Louisville, so that's always exciting. Louisville's kind of crossroads of America, still kind of the heart of the PCA or close to the heart of the PCA. So I'm certainly planning to be there, George. So we'll see what the Lord has in store.
yes, and is it a record numbers of turnout?
That's what I'm told, that it's going to be a record year. So exciting stuff.
Okay.
Exciting stuff.
Well, and so a record year with, I think, a record number of overtures. We definitely are going to want somebody with the polity chops to be able to be our moderator and do it with grace and a smile. And I think the Lord is going to take care of us there, Mel.
Well, I'm certainly confident with Fred on the stage and all the good men in the room that we'll be well served, brother. We'll be well served.
Good. Okay. So going into this year's General Assembly, what are the things you're looking you're keeping an eye on? Obviously, yeah.
Why don't I just turn the tables on you? You get to ask folks this question all the time. You're out there talking to more folks probably than me. What are the things that you're hearing from people that folks want to talk about at GA? I mean, obviously, we've got two study committee reports. We've got more overtures maybe than we've ever had on a variety of topics, a lot of women deacon kind of overtures on a variety of a spectrum. What do you think is the most important of those items? And then maybe what's something that's like a dark horse out there that you think we need to pay attention to?
Wow. Well, I have been, this will be hard to believe, but now that I'm not serving in a local church in a formal capacity, obviously, we are in a local church, but I haven't been as in tune with all these overtures. Like usually I have my thumb on the pulse of all of these and because they affect how the local church operates. Certainly this is definitely a carryover year from the concerns of last year. And so, like you said, the two study committees, the Christian nationalism one and the worship one. And, as far as Christian nationalism, I just hope we put it to bed. That's my hope for it. I think there's some good guys on it. I think, there obviously we're adjudicating this whole thing on X and online, and there's stuff being written, but my feeling all along, and you could tell me where you feel on this, has been we actually do know the boundaries. When things happen that are out of bounds, they're dealt with and have been dealt with in every NAEPARC denomination, including now in the PCA, in a Presbyterian in Pennsylvania, regarding the specific race stuff. And really it comes down to, for me, how you hold your views. So we can elevate any view to undue prominence to overshadow our mission, the mission of the church, the preeminency of the gospel, and all of that. I just, as I talk to pastors, I'm like, do you really not know how to deal with these things? And the sense I get is that this is going to help churches and pastors give things something to members who are really, forwarding certain views or wanting to know why their church isn't promoting certain things, But I just think the pastors, I think we're equipped for this already. So this will be a denominational statement on it. Well, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to reading the denominational report. I know and trust many of the men on that committee, certainly think the world of David Strain, and look forward to the way they shape that. There's always the conversation within the PCA And then there's the online conversation, which sometimes is the most extreme version that is not exactly the conversation that happens within my local church or your local church. And then there's the conversation in the culture, which is a whole different conversation. I think those are three very different kind of conversations. I think we all have a robust view of the moral law of God being applicable to American society. And I'm quite sure that this study committee is going to draw those lines broadly in such a way that every PCA Sunday school teacher is going to be empowered to enthusiastically declare God's moral law having preeminence over every square inch of the world we live in. And I'm looking forward to affirming that. I think in terms of some of the particularities of how that applies to earlier versions of the Westminster Confession of Faith and such, I mean, I want to see how doctors of the church handle that and how that applies to you know, stated differences and examinations of men. I mean, I need to be instructed by that, and I may have spoken too hastily about that and opined too robustly about that in certain ways. I think these kind of conversations touch on eschatological views that I'm certain ones of us hold to amillennial views, and others of us hold to postmillennial views, and others of us or a handful of folks hold to premillennial views, and that then touches into political discussions that in some ways have nothing to do with this discussion, and in other ways present themselves front and center. And I think in some ways that's gotten all convoluted in the middle of this, in the middle of electioneering that frankly have nothing to do with the church at all. And then the whole social media aspect to this, which is unsavory and in some way makes meaningful conversation hard to do at all. I'm looking forward to learning about it. I think it'll make having a PCA position paper on this, like many of our PCA position papers, I think it'll make the church better. I was watching Dr. Al Mohler. I think I've joked with you, George, that over the years I've liked to say that I like to begin my day with the Lord, and then I listen to Al Mohler, you know, when it comes to political things. I was watching him the other night, and he made a comment that Christian nationalism as a cultural expression is just the latest in a long line of words that's a slur against Christians involved in cultural engagement. And if you go back to, you know, moral majority or a whole series of words that were sometimes developed by Christians for themselves, sometimes other words used as slurs. And I don't know if Christian nationalism, I'm not qualified really. I still don't know what it means, George, but I don't know if it's a wise word or not. But he made the comment that it's probably going to be used only as a slur against Christians doing what Christians should be doing anyway. So I thought that was instructive to me. But I'm looking forward to the report. What you know me, George, I'm really looking forward to the Directory for Worship Study Committee report. I'm so excited to hear that it might actually be done by GA. That's my beating heart. I'm a Calvin guy. I really think the Reformation, the point of it was about getting worship right. And so I'm excited to see what Nate Sheridan and that committee might have been able to do with that. And so I'm super excited about that. Can't wait to get my hands on that one as well.
I'm shocked, Mel, that they might report this assembly, in a comprehensive way. I mean, I thought my understanding, if I remembered, it was going to be a standing committee present
chapters.
Yeah, I thought
it'd be a multi-year thing. Yeah.
Well, you know what I think, too? Like, I think it goes to show that our directory of worship, which isn't constitutional, at least the majority of it isn't, is actually really good, because they would never be able to present something at this GA if it required massive overhauls. Yeah. So there's clearly some sticking points that, you know, some are concerned about, and it sounds like they must have, you know, worked worked through those. And so, yeah, that'll be a great one to because how could we be a Presbyterian Reformed denomination without a directory of worship?
Without a directory for worship. And it yes, I mean, absolutely to that. And it actually, though, speaks to our history, George, and the PCA has been on a journey towards the Reformation from day one. And it's why I'm actually enthusiastic about the PCA, and it's why I'm hopeful and excited about the direction we're in, is that we're headed and have always been headed in the right direction. And the very fact that we're talking about a directory for worship, I know we're not where we need to be, and we're not all lockstep, and everybody's not excited about singing psalms in a worship service. I get that. But the fact that we're discussing it and talking about it is actually a good sign, and I'm just very pleased with the direction of the discussion and the debate, and looking forward to see what this committee comes up with.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, I really do think the Lord is doing something. There's all these debates right now you've seen around, you know, Second Commandment violations and images of Christ. And, you know, I thought Meadowview, the church that I recently resigned my call, I thought we were like one of the only ones to remove we had an 8-foot stained glass Jesus that was very meaningful to the church. It was 75 years old. And I'm seeing all these other churches saying they just removed theirs. And I understand there could be some more on the horizon. And, you know, the Lord is actually doing something. And, you know, that's a good thing. It reminds me of the Old Testament and the tearing down of the high places. And, you know, a lot of kings were there. The summary of their life was, this was a good king. And yet it would say something like, but they didn't tear down the high places. In other words, they're still viewed as good, but there was still this work to be done in Israel. And in some cases it took hundreds of years. Now, of course, you know, it ultimately all didn't end up good for the nation. But the point was, you know, I could picture the people in Israel saying, how could you tear down these high places? These are family places of worship. And yet that's what the Lord calls people to do in his timing. And so I'm just using that as an anecdote in general.
It's something that I think a lot of PCA people may never have thought of, and some maybe are thinking about in new ways now. And I am the story of Meadowview is one of the really great stories in the recent life of the PCA, and I hope to see it in other churches soon and in the not too distant future.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, I don't think the director of worship touches the idea of images of Christ. Yeah. So I was just using it as an example of reforms, as you were saying, how the PCA is on a trajectory, because I do hear, you know, some of the argument is, well, we were founded as XYZ, and the implication is that we can never reform from that. You know, they wouldn't use those terminologies, but no, we're always called to be reforming. I mean, that is a principle of the Reformation. So,
right.
Yes. So another one you said was the dark horse thing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I think there's some things flying under the radar with RAO changes, Rule of Assembly Operations, because those will be presented the first night.
Right.
That's usually a night that has lower attendance. Because people are just arriving, or they don't want to come, whatever. And that will impact the assembly as soon as it's voted in.
Right.
There's no presbytery.
So you have a worship service, you elect a moderator. A lot of times you rush out of the hall after that, and then boom, boom, boom. You do all these procedural things that you're really not paying attention to, but they have impact on nominating committee and sometimes structural things related to committees. There are some significant RAO things related to how you elect permanent committees. Some of them may relate to guests on this podcast who got elected from the floor to certain committees. And I had a good chuckle with a mutual friend of ours at a conference we attended a few weeks ago together about that. And we got to stay informed and pay attention. The truth is, George, there are so many of these overtures we don't even have a handle on this yet. I think as the time and date of this recording, there are 67 of these, maybe 68. My presbytery is meeting later this week. There's potentially four more in the pipeline. I've heard there's a handful more circulating around. So, you know, we're not done yet with overtures. So buckle up, PCA. There's more on the way.
Yes. You know, and this is usually when there'll be calls for delegated assemblies and such.
Right.
And I just
right.
want to say, like, I love our system. I love, I mean, we have, I think we have the best of all the alternatives.
Of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a delegated overtures committee, which, which presents to the floor, and we can't edit on the floor, but everybody who wants to come, or is commissioned by their church to come can be present.
And in many ways you can, the whole assembly takes place those first 2 days in overtures, in that room. And that's a very deliberative process, and it's pretty exciting and robust, and there's a lot of back and forth, and I love the way the PCA does it. It really is the best of both worlds, and there's a kind of formality and dignity to the big hall, and then there's an intensity to the overtures committee. I hope it never changes, George. I like the way we do it. It's very expensive. It's very time consuming. It gets more expensive every year. We've got so many people coming now. There's only so many kinds of cities that can host GEA. So it's tricky to pull it off each year. But I love the way we do it, and I hope it continues in this formula that we do it at.
Yes, and to that point, too, when Fred Greco was our moderator, I think that year was boasting, if not the most overtures, some of the most hotly contested ones, and everybody wondered if we would, you know, go into Friday, and here he gets us out in record time or almost record time.
Right.
And that just shows you like the importance of having the right moderator.
Have a deft touch to pull it off. And you've got to really encourage men to make arguments and not be emotive. And there's a kind of argument at GA in which you really need to make an argument for the purpose of helping the room make a decision, not for the purpose of making a statement or for social media. We've had some of those in recent years. And the truth is we have some really good speeches at GA. We do have some bad speeches at GA. And we have some, you know, but for the most part, we have some, my general sense when I come to GA is that there are 200 or 300 people who are really informed and super prepared, and that they are really engaged. You know, out of 2,000 people in the room, there are really several hundred people locked and loaded, and they know exactly what's going on. And, I love the PCA General Assembly. I think it is a remarkably Presbyterian gathering. It's remarkably representative. I think the PCA General Assembly, particularly the last 7 or 8 years, and I hate to keep banging on Revoice, but Revoice woke up the PCA. I mean, how many times, George, have you and I talked about it? A bad thing caused the PCA to wake up and realize we've got to get involved. And a lot of, you know, mutual friends of yours and mine, just they were asleep at the wheel, and we had to shake them, you know, and say, look, we are not going to do this. And it got a lot of ruling elders involved. It got a lot of churches involved, got a lot of people elected to permanent committees, and got people involved with committee of commissioners. And we are not going to let our PCA, beloved PCA, get involved in intersectionality, and get involved in side B gay Christianity, and get involved in egalitarianism. And we are not going to go the way of our mother denomination. And I feel like we are making course adjustments, not perfectly. But I think what you see in response to Revoice, and to some degree, something of a reformed resurgence, broadly speaking, out there. I think you see a revitalized and reformed PCA. I think some of that is because in a broader reformed world, there are good things going on. I mean, I'm proud of my big brother, Ligon, at RTS. I'm proud of my friend, Dave Garner, at Westminster Seminary. I'm proud of my friend, Jonathan Master, at Greenville Seminary. I'm proud of my friend, John Payne, at the GRN. And I see a lot of good reformed movements out there. And I think a lot of those are in lockstep with what's going on in the PCA. And I'm excited. I think a lot of these things are speaking into the life of conservative, evangelical, reformed PCA churches and movements and church plants. And you see it in the churchmanship reflected at PCA General Assemblies and in the philosophy of ministry of churches that affiliate with groups like the Gospel Reformation Network, for example.
Yes. So that's a great segue into the GRN because, you know, I was one of those guys that was woken up through the Revoice controversy. You know, I really just was more of a local church guy. I thought at the time I was a ruling elder, I thought the pastors go and do that, you know, General Assembly stuff. And quite frankly, I was, and I've told you this, some of my concerns were, when the views were presented to me, I always felt like I was a more conservative person, but I felt like our brothers on the left side of the spectrum within the PCA, I'll repeat that. They're often friendlier, kinder, and yet like the Revoice side B debates were a tipping point for me. And our session was thinking of leaving the PCA. And that was the story of a lot of sessions. And in God's providence, the GRN hosted that, what is to me I believe the first conference at Briarwood.
Yeah.
Dr. Harry Reeder's greatest talks on progressive Christianity was given.
Yeah.
David Strain gave an amazing talk. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. David Strain gave an amazing talk on confessionalism, and there were so many good ones. And the vibe there was, it almost felt like, it was my first time there, it almost felt like people were wondering, is this a meeting to split? And that wasn't it at all. The GRN wasn't looking to split. The GRN was looking to keep the PCA together. And the message was one of unity. And and I really do think the Lord used the GRN to keep the denomination together. I don't, you know, and I know you guys don't do it for credit, but I really do believe that, because we do know there were, you know, offshoots of presbyteries that were micro denominations that formed in that time. And there were a lot of churches that could have gone with them. But, you know, I know my elders came back, you know, 2 years in a row, I won the award for bringing the most people.
That's right. That's right.
My elders came back that second year and said, we're staying in the PCA because, you know, there were such good things going on. And, you know, we've come through the Revoice thing, although, as I've always said, well, a pastor left and his church left, but there were a lot of supporters that are here. So I don't know where their views are, but I guess today the big sort of cultural debate is, as you already alluded to, egalitarian stuff, what's being called online, you know, functional female officers. And what are some of your thoughts on that issue?
Well, I think there's a spectrum on that. And I think the more important thing related to that is that the Gospel Reformation Network, like a lot of different good reformed ministries connected to the PCA, is providing a positive philosophy of ministry that is going to show folks that you don't have to cater to the culture. You don't have to dance to the culture's tune when it comes to egalitarian views of women or any variety of things when it comes to functional female office bearing, to have a robust, godly church, and for women to flourish in your church. And George, I'm just a ruling elder in Greenville, South Carolina, that, coaches a boys basketball team and teaches Sunday school and tries to help my church grow, and I'm working on a building campaign, and I'm not sure that the challenges I have in my church in Greenville are the same as the urban areas and the great American cities. But what I do know is that I think some of the contextually driven ministry models that are out there may be yesterday's way of doing things. And I don't want to lose confidence in doing things by being committed to biblical and reformed patterns of ministry. And I'm not going to stop advocating for those way of doing things. And I'm not going to broaden our patterns of ministry to accommodate culturally pattern, driven ways of doing ministries. And so, and on the one hand, some of these overtures, which are just straight up calling for ordaining women, I think it's helpful because it's just, it's out there, and we can finally just say, okay, that's what you're calling for. Let's debate it honestly, and finally someone's actually doing that, and we're doing that. Folks have been talking about this for 30 years in the PCA, and I've been a part of these discussions within the PCA as long as I've been an officer in the PCA. So I'm aware of it, and I'm aware that that's what a large group of people want to do, and I do not want to do that, and I'm going to argue against that. Here's what I would say about it. For the last 25 years, there has been a tide washing into the shore that has been, in my opinion, somewhat culturally driven, that has been getting closer and closer to the shore, that has been egalitarian driven, that has been chipping away at the view of ordaining women as deacons. And I think the last 5 or 10 years, that's actually been getting further and further away from the shore. And I think the folks, and a lot of these guys are our friends, George, you and I would admit that, but I think some of these folks don't realize that. And I think that they are continuing to advocate this, and the more they advocate for this, the further out to sea their view is getting, is my perspective on that.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. I think it's interesting. You said it a couple times about how like this was yesterday's sort of way of doing things. I think 10 years ago, it was again life in the negative world, the Ayn
Yeah,
Rand book,
that's exactly right. Yeah.
and so there was all this, well, we have to figure out how to reach and contextualize. Of course, we always need to figure out how to reach, but like that meant changing how we did things in the church. And I think what we're seeing is there's at least a resurgence of people actually wanting more traditional things. But we don't do things just to be traditional.
Yeah.
We want to be biblical. And I guess what concerned me over the last, since I've been paying attention, is there was a lot of almost like winking at what our BCO says. So, like operating kind of in the shadows, pushing those boundaries through doing things like, not even ordaining diaconates so that we have, co-ed deaconing peoples or
Yeah.
such,
Yeah.
and all these different things. And there's been all kinds of, questions about those things. And then it kind of just came out on the floor of GA that I don't know if it was
Yeah.
last year or the year
Yeah.
before, where guys finally were open about the
Yeah.
fact, one, that they think we should have ordained at least deacons,
Yeah.
deaconesses, and two, that they deliberately don't have diaconates because of this, which was really an admission that they are in violation. So the fact that
And
now,
George, you know this more than me because you have lived and ministered in presbyteries very different than the presbytery I have lived and ministered in. It really depends on the presbytery you live and minister in. You know, if you live in a very, the presbytery that I live in is called very narrow and restrictive. It's not really, but there's some latitude in the presbytery that I live and minister in, but there's no one in the presbytery that I live in that would not have a diaconate, for example, to do the kind of silly thing that you're talking about right there. But there are some presbyteries that you are referring to that just straight up would have female diaconates, and they would just call them that, and they would not ordain anyone and call them female deacons. And that may be the majority view in certain prominent PCA presbyteries. And if you're just a good old-fashioned, you know, BCO Chapter 9 PCA Presbyterian, you're looked at as something of an enigma if you articulate that view as being normative. And this is the challenge of the PCA. I mean, this is the paradox of grassroots Presbyterian PCAism, George, because it really depends on what presbytery you're in. And this is also the challenge of why we've got to keep thrashing through this every General Assembly, and why I think this General Assembly in Louisville is going to be something of a landmark, because I think we are going to have some significant rulings, like we did after Revoice, on these BCO changes where we tightened up our examinations of ministers and elders and deacons. I think this might actually be the assembly where we definitively make some statements about what the diaconate is and who it is and whether it's authoritative or not and whether it's male only or not. And even the titles that are allowed to be used for it. I think we are actually going to go a little bit further to being more declarative with it than maybe we ever have before.
Matt, well, that, I mean, clarity is good. And, you know, to something you said earlier and to the point I was building to was, I'm glad now there's openness about what different groups in the PCA want, as opposed to, you know, saying certain people are assistants to the diaconate, but they actually have votes, as, you know, they're using these assistants to the diaconates to actually lead worship. Like, yeah. There's people now that are actually saying the quiet part out loud, and now we can actually debate it. And I do think, I mean, it's funny, there's some overtures. I don't know the numbers, but there's overtures that are trying to do the exact opposite thing. And so it's going to be really interesting, because overtures committee is going to have to decide upon a view, a position, and then modify those and then point the other ones to that. And
sometimes a new thetic kind of thing will yield a, you know, a result, because you have to do one or the other.
Right.
And,
right.
I think we will have an outcome. Now, my thesis, George, is that, we've argued about women deacons for three General Assemblies now. I think what you're going to see is the fruit of two or three General Assemblies arguing about this. And I think we'll have something of a cataclysm in Overtures Committee. And then I think that will present, again, this is just me, Uncle Mel, blue skying for you here. I think there'll be something of a consensus to the Assembly. I think typically the Assembly goes along with the Overtures Committee, and then we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. The Assembly has been trending more conservative lately, and we'll see if the presbyteries go along with that.
Right. Well, I anticipate there'll be a minority report. Whichever side Overture
right.
comes down on, there's
right.
going to be enough of a minority that there will be a
right.
minority report. And so the debate
right.
on the floor will be robust. And
right.
this is good. And by the way, this is a point I think gets lost in the discussion about, like, the importance of the unity of the church. Like, people think, well, we can have these different views and approaches and we should just accept that that latitude, that would maybe big tentness, whatever. But the problem is, like you said, in presbyteries, where guys are trying to be faithful to the reading of our documents, they're serving in churches who are reading these things very differently. And how that breaks the unity is because those views then infiltrate the church. You know, yeah. I mean, we saw this at Meadowview. We had a woman speaker who was approved and we thought was fine, but she was coming from a church that had a much broader view of what women can do and should do in leadership. And at this, she took it upon herself to be an activist at our women's Christmas dinner, you know, because she had the floor. And she's sowing these seeds of dissension within our body. We operate in a different way. And to our women's credit, they saw right through it and they were very angered by it. But like, yeah, you know, there's some latitude you can have in a denomination. And then there's some very structural things that you have to be united around. And so hopefully this GA will help crystallize that. Yeah. What else for this General Assembly are you seeing or thinking?
I'm not sure, other than overtures and, you know, the new stated clerk. Those are probably the things that I'm most tracking in right now. I guess the big thing that I'm most looking forward to at General Assembly is our GRN banquet on Wednesday night. I hope everybody will plan to come to that. We always have the biggest ballroom on site. John Payne will be speaking for us that night. Please come to that. Bring your whole church commissioners group. A lot of churches will kind of make that their commissioners dinner and they'll sit together around the table.
Wives.
Yeah, bring your wives. That's always a fun thing to do. Last year, I think we had about 1,000 people in the room. It was amazing. I'm trying to get John to let us sing this year, so stick around and see if I can win that argument. It's a lot of fun. Come on Wednesday night and enjoy the Wednesday night dinner and look forward to that. And, you know, it's the one time a year the PCA family gathers together. There's plenty of things that causes us to have division, but let's just remember the PCA, for all its problems, and we have a lot of problems, surely it is the best many choices that's out there amongst Presbyterian and Reformed denominations. So many good churches, so many good things happening in our denomination, and let's enjoy what God is doing in our midst and celebrate the peace and the purity and the unity within the PCA.
Good word, Mel. Yes. And so that you can go to gospelreformation.net and get the tickets for the dinner. I don't know if they're up yet, but that's where they will be.
Sure are.
And just as we, you know, round the bend from General Assembly and talk about the conference in a second, my appeal to listeners, especially, you know, first time GA attenders or such. I mean, yes, please go the first night and stay. It's not just the election of a moderator. There will be rule changes voted upon that are going to affect this assembly. And then, you know, we focused on overtures and listen to the other guys, listen to Polity Matters and Westminster Standard Podcast. I'm sure they're going to do PresbyCast. I'm sure they'll do analysis. Yeah. I'm not doing any analysis, but don't think the overtures are the only thing. As a matter of fact, every year, the last few years, the RPR report on Presbyterian records, Presbytery records has been very important. And then the nominating committee nominations has been very important. I mean, this is typically what happens. If there's no scandal, people think, you know, we could be asleep at the wheel. And well, you're voting on people who are going to oversee these committees. Yeah. And if committees go one way or the other, you want the right guys in there. And so that's just my appeal, to be there for the business. There's plenty of time to do the fun stuff. You know, Mel, I burn the candle at both ends to just get it all.
Me too.
I know.
Me too. Well, I love it.
Yeah, let's talk about the Gospel Reformation Network Conference. Yeah. And I will say, Birmingham is great, and I loved going there, and it's so beautiful and this time of year. But
Yeah.
like you're Fort Lauderdale, come on, guys.
Yeah. So if you're in Florida, first weekend in May, particularly if you're in Central Florida or South Florida, we have an amazing, absolutely amazing event. It's in Fort Lauderdale. It's at Coral Ridge, the amazing Coral Ridge, with the great Rob Pazienza as pastor. Run with endurance, finishing strong, in gospel ministry, our national conference, May 5th through 7th. It's an absolute, all-star kind of event. We've got, of course, Kevin DeYoung, Ligon, John Payne, Joel Beakey, Ian Hamilton, Jason Holopoulos, Jonathan Master was just announced as a new speaker this week. And of course, Rob Pazienza will be speaking. It'll be on the campus at Coral Ridge. Come join us. This is a great conference for ministers, but if you're a layman and you just want some good gospel ministry, good Bible teaching, please come and join us. There's some special pricing available for Coral Ridge folks as well. We'd love for you to join us. This is a great event for Bible teaching, but also for ministers and ruling elders and deacons. So a good GRN event for our friends in South Florida. We hope to see you there.
You can't say it much better. And great speakers. And it seems like it's longer this year, Mel. Am I, is that just my impression?
It's a longer event. I mean, it's a Ligonier style lineup, George, and we're giving them the good stuff this year for sure.
Awesome. Well, I will be there. The last day, I won't be there for that last morning. That's the National Day of Prayer, and I got to be back in
Oh,
Tallahassee.
wow.
Yeah,
Wow.
I think I'm part of the lineup on the
Wow.
Capitol, so we'll see about that. But I'll be there for the most of it. So if you go, be sure to say hi. That's one of the cool things about this. It's
Yeah.
like you get
Yeah.
to meet and talk to
Just
all
be
these
with
guys.
everybody. Yeah.
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 Yeah, you
Yeah.
could say hi to Mel.
Yeah.
Well, it is always fun talking to you, Mel. I appreciate you and appreciate the GRN. Of course, I'm on the general counsel and always honored to represent how I can. And one cool thing is you guys have a new executive council member, do you not?
We do. We're so excited to have Steven Spinnenweber as our new executive council member, kind of our new millennial on the executive council, and he's doing a great job. We love Spin, another Florida man on the executive council, and loving having him. And of course, we love having you, George, and grateful for your ministry, and excited to see how the Lord is using you at Ministry to State in Tallahassee.
Oh, thanks for that, Mel. And I wanted to have Spin on with you. Is he a millennial? I thought he was Gen Z. But man, that he puts me to shame. And he's
Yeah.
awesome. And
Yeah.
he's
Yeah.
only 2 hours from me in Jacksonville.
Yep.
And so
Yeah.
I'm gonna bust on him, and he's not gonna be able to defend himself. But I got him an invite to the governor's mansion to
Oh,
a
wow.
lunch with Casey DeSantis, so Ron
Oh,
DeSantis's
wow.
wife, with about 10 pastors, and he
Wow.
came and went and didn't say hi to me.
Oh, my goodness.
He called me on
Well,
the drive back to Jacksonville.
I think there might be some, there might need to be an investigation of this, George. So,
I am holding a grudge. I
oh
No,
dear.
he's at a phenomenal church. I love his church.
Yeah.
I've
Yeah.
been able to preach there and teach there too. And only 2 hours away in Jacksonville, so
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's Spin. If you watch this, that's my dig to you. Next time you're in the Capitol and I get you tickets, you're gonna say hi to me. But
Love it.
anyhow, Mel, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you in like 2 weeks, and I hope everybody.
Looking forward to it, brother. Appreciate you. Thank you for having me on. Grateful for you.
You're welcome. Likewise.
This blessed frame of mind in our Lord Jesus and all his sufferings is that which the apostle proposes for our encouragement and unto our imitation. And it is that which contains the exercise of all grace in faith, love, submission to the will of God, zeal for his glory, and compassion for the souls of men in their highest degree. And if he went so through his suffering and was victorious in the issue, we also may do so in ours through his assistance, who is the author and finisher of our faith.
Hello, my name is John Payne, and I have the privilege of serving as the executive coordinator of the Gospel Reformation Network, a network of PCA teaching and ruling elders who are committed to cultivating healthy Reformed churches in the PCA. As we expand our ministries, we continue to challenge the PCA to maintain biblical fidelity and confessional integrity. That is, an unyielding commitment to the inerrancy, inspiration, authority, sufficiency, and efficacy of Scripture for faith and practice, along with a resolute adherence to the Westminster Standards. We also want the PCA to be gospel-driven and Christ-exalting in ministry, that there'd be a sincere passion to proclaim the gospel of grace, always with the aim of exalting Christ in God's people. We also want to challenge the PCA to be earnest in prayer and committed to expository preaching, that is, to have a resolve to practice fervent prayer in the closet and from the pulpit, along with an unbending dedication to expository preaching that informs the mind and transforms the heart. In addition, there is godly leadership. We want to encourage PCA pastors to cultivate piety in their lives. And then there's Reformed worship. We want to challenge the PCA to be committed to the regulative principle of worship and worshiping according to the Word of God and our confession. And finally, missional clarity and church multiplication. We want to encourage and challenge the PCA to be committed to what the Bible calls the mission of the church. If you're interested in learning more about the Gospel Reformation Network, go to our informative website, or better yet, join us at one of our future events as we seek together to cultivate healthy Reformed churches in the PCA.
The training of the next generation of pastoral leaders is of vital importance. The problem is that seminary is oftentimes incredibly expensive. You have to uproot your family, you have to go to another place where you're not plugged into a local church. What BTS does is it provides a way for people to continue in their hometown, continue in their present ministry, gain the tools that they need for pastoral leadership, be equipped for the work of the ministry for the long haul, and do it inexpensively but substantively. I love that about Birmingham Theological Seminary.